behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bullen.
And I'm going to start today with, in kind of an unusual way. I usually don't do this, but I'm going to read a comment from one of our listeners. His name is Glenn Beck, and he wrote in to Car Stuff. And you remember Glenn from, I think it was the Road Rally show that we did.
Oh, yeah. Glenn's awesome.
Glenn was on that.
We talked to Glenn back and forth pretty frequently.
Yeah, I would say often. And Team Limer, I think, is the name of it.
Yeah.
This is a lime green-colored Mustang.
Uh-huh.
We wrote in something kind of funny about our latest podcast, or one of our most recent podcasts, I guess, about horsepower versus torque. And he said, this is kind of funny. It's just a quick Facebook comment.
Uh-huh.
But he said, I really enjoyed your horsepower torque discussion. Here's a cheeky synopsis that I've seen several places without attribution. And here it is. He says, understeer is when you hit the wall with the front end of the car, and oversteer is when you hit the wall with the back end of the car. However, horsepower is how fast you hit the wall, and torque is how far you take the wall with you.
I thought that was great. Look, Scott, I have the same thing printed out because I was going to do it as listener mail, too.
No kidding. Sorry, I didn't mean to grab that from you, but I thought that was a pretty clever way to say it. And I've never seen that little quote anywhere.
I haven't either, and it's pretty clever, definitely.
So horsepower is how fast you hit the wall. Torque is how far you take the wall with you. We completely neglected that angle in our horsepower versus torque discussion.
The science checks out, guys. It's not just funny. So big thanks to you, Mr. Beck. We hope you are doing well there with the team.
You know what? I know he is because we talk to him often, or at least we hear from him often.
Mm-hmm.
We don't always get to respond, but we try to often.
Yeah. And we are going to talk about something, speaking of exciting times, right? Like we had this joke about hitting walls and car accidents and things like that.
Yeah.
This makes me think of 80s movies, today's topic.
Definitely 80s movies. And you know what? The funny thing is it carries over even through today. It's something that has just been around in popular culture for a long time. And there's some odd twists in this one, I'll tell you, because, you know, we're talking about commandeering cars. You know, can a police officer walk up, show a badge, tell you to get out of the car, mm-hmm. and they jump in and take off after the criminal?
Can they really do that?
Is it possible? I mean, is it real? Have they ever done it? I mean, does it ever really happen?
Ooh.
And we'll find out, you know, along the way if it does or doesn't. But there's some pretty interesting stuff about this one. So hang in there. You know, it's not just the movie trope, I guess, you know, that
right.
you know, it does happen. But so let's get dig into this one. How about that?
Okay. Yeah. So we'll start off by saying something that was surprising. When I first started looking into this topic, I thought it would be, it would turn out to be utter nonsense, you know, utter mm-hmm. bunk.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause if you think about it, it's a very strange thing to do because it's essentially, it would be like carjacking, but with a legal, with a legal standing, you know?
I guess that's probably a good way to put it,
and,
carjacking.
I mean, that's essentially what it would be. They're kidnapping your car. That's carjacking.
I suppose so.
But the answer about whether or not this is legal depends on where you go and who you talk to. Scott, you and I deal with a lot of stuff that changes on a state by state basis.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from licensing requirements to, vehicle safety requirements and stuff like that. But I did not expect police commandeering to be one of those state-by-state things.
Hey, exactly, and that's what it is. It turns out that it depends on local laws and or state laws, rather. And I don't know. Boy, I didn't even dig into the international angle in this one because already here in the States, it was already tricky enough.
Yeah, this one's complicated enough, man.
It really is, and you'll find out that state-to-state is different on this thing. But, I mean, just I guess the most basic act of commandeering, I guess, is when you appropriate a vehicle, like either the military or the police are able to take possession of a vehicle or property of a member of the public. And what that does is that I think in some cases they say that it's a violation of your, was it Fourth Amendment rights? Is that right?
Right. Yeah. But there's another thing we have to hit here. When we say vehicle, we don't just mean cars. This means that in states where this kind of stuff flies, it's possible to it's possible to commandeer a plane even or a boat and
ATV or a bicycle.
Yeah. And also it doesn't just have to be a vehicle. It can be property as well. So for instance, you have a firearm and a police officer requires it or something like that.
Okay. I didn't even think of this whole angle of it. I was thinking strictly of vehicles and, yeah. And the whole Fourth Amendment thing. I mean, that's the amendment that protects you against search and seizure without due process. But
right.
the idea is that, you know, police are not the due process part of that whole thing. That supposedly is handled by the court. So, you know, there's no time for that to happen when there's an actual crime going down.
Right.
Is there time for them to really, you know, make a judicious, I don't know.
Judicious informed decision?
Yeah, decision, I guess, as to whether it's their legal right to take that vehicle at that time. Is that the right vehicle for them to take? And, you know, why did they do it? I mean, do the means justify? Wait, did I get that backwards?
Oh, you're getting there.
Do
the ends justify the means?
That's it. Ends justify the means. Ben, I'm finding myself struggling for words here.
Well, don't worry, because we're talking about a very unusual and strange situation. One thing that we can say, that we can myth bust here, is that these acts of commandeering are exceedingly rare in the modern day, mm-hmm. and never would happen as often as you see in a crime movie, you know?
You know what? And just how rare they are, I'll tell you, the places that I went to find information about this, and I went to, you know, like the Straight Dope, and I went to Snopes, and I went to places like that, you know, a lot of people collaborate and say, you know, they've got the answer to this, or even, I mean, some of the online question type websites that say, yeah. you know, is it possible for this to happen? If so, can I be compensated? Things like that. There were a lot of questions. And in fact, I want to talk about compensation in just a minute.
Yeah, but, me too.
The examples that I've got here, and one is from Snopes. And just to give you an idea of how rare this is, the person that they talked to, you know, the officer that they talked to, I think his name is Dennis Zein, who was a director of the Los Angeles Police Department, or rather the Los Angeles Police Protective League, and formerly a street cop. So I guess he was in the LAPD.
Yeah.
26 years. 26 years he's been on the scene. Three times has he ever seen this happen. And he's actually done this three times. And that is, as a matter of fact, that's what they say is three times more than most cops have ever seen this happen. Now, in his case, he actually commandeered a private delivery truck, a city trash truck, and a bicycle. To chase a fleeing, forgery suspect, I think is what he said.
Yeah.
Now that's actually three times in 26 years. That's a rarity, because a lot of these officers that you read in other articles, like
we'll say that they haven't seen it in their entire career.
Yeah.
Or it's never happened in the history of their jurisdiction even.
Yeah. So like, I mean, going back through the history of the whole police force in that city, wherever it is. Now, this is from the Los Angeles Times. So, you know, same city, but different police officer. They interviewed somebody from, they interviewed somebody from Washington, D.C.
Oh, okay.
Looking through my notes.
Uh-huh.
16 years. This guy was with the FBI, Ben, you know, right in the heart of, you know, Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
In the FBI. He has never heard of anybody doing that in the whole time that he's been there in 16 years, and doesn't know of anybody locally that this has ever happened to. There's also a Sergeant Lee Sands, who was a spokesperson for the LAPD in 23 years again, same as, well, I guess it's 23 years versus 26, but says it's never happened. There's one good example, though, in Los Angeles, and this is kind of an oddity, I guess.
All right, lay it on me.
Do you remember in 1997 there was that North Hollywood bank robbery that
yeah.
was televised?
Yeah.
And there were cameras all over the place. There was helicopter footage. These guys were in, I don't know what type of vehicle they were in, but they were in they were heavily armed. They were in body armor. They were firing at the police with assault rifles, you know, machine guns, you know, whatever they had. I don't remember
they were like
what type
professional
of
criminals.
Exactly. Yeah. And the gun battle went right to the streets. And they actually, and I don't know if you can even call this commandeering, but the police found a civilian armored truck that they used as a bulletproof barricade. And that's how they defeated these guys. They were able to walk up toward, you know, to them. Eventually ended, you know, with them killing the suspects, but not suspects really. These guys did it. I mean,
yeah.
They were the ones, but the shootout ended very dramatically on the street, but it ended because they were able to find this civilian vehicle that was, you know, again, bulletproof armored vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you can call that commandeering or not. I mean, they borrowed it. It wasn't like they rushed up to somebody's door, you know, showed a badge.
Get out of the truck.
And then chased after him. Yeah, exactly. I mean, but what it did was this whole thing pointed to the need for better protection for police. And so I think it was in like 6 years later in 2003,
uh-huh.
the force finally had an armored SWAT truck. It was something like, the thing weighs 14 tons, Ben.
Wow.
So they realized the need for something like this. But, you know, so that one had a good ending, I guess, for the police. But you know, it just shows you that, like, it's so, so rare because, you know, mm-hmm. 16 years of the FBI, 23 years of the LAPD,
yeah.
26 years of the LAPD, these people have never seen it happen.
And it used to happen more often. Old-timers are able to recall the frequency of commandeering and how it sort of tapered off. What got me really interested in this topic initially as we were digging in was the history of it. And you saw that article on Straight Dope, right, Scott?
I did.
And there's a fascinating part here, where they talk about the legal history or precedent of commandeering property. This is, according to our buddy Cecil over at Straight Dope, the Connecticut Supreme Court noted in a case called, State versus Floyd, that the basic concept that every citizen can be compelled to assist in the pursuit or apprehension of suspected criminals has ancient Saxon origins, predating the Norman conquest, and derives from a time in which the public peace depended upon the ability of the populace to summon their neighbors through the raising of hue and cry to come to their assistance when a crime had occurred. So people already are citing the precedent of stuff that goes back to the 13th century and so on.
So this is almost like, I know it's a written law, but it's almost like a moral obligation to help the police if you can, because they're out to get the bad guys, right?
Right. Yes. And, this idea of commandeering a vehicle, if it's in a state where this is legal under the circumstances and you don't do it, you know, you say, well, I don't care how many loaves of bread that guy stole. This is a Murcielago, my friend, and you are not driving it.
yeah, I guess, you know, you'd have to pick and choose. I mean, would the police go for something like that? Would they go for a vehicle that was a flat-out sports car after trying to catch somebody? Or would they go for something that's a little more sturdy?
That's what I'm thinking. I imagine it's not going to go like it would in the movies.
I mean, just imagine this. Like, let's say there's a fleeing bank robber. And you're, the police officer enters the intersection, kind of takes a quick scan around, sees a pickup truck, you know, like an F-350 or whatever, and a sports car, like, let's say a Corvette or a Ferrari or something like that there. Which is he going to choose to chase the police officer, or to chase the bank robber, rather? Is he going to choose the F-350? Or is he going to choose the sports car? Now, of course, you can catch up to the car a lot quicker with the sports car, but is he going to have the ramming capability of the truck?
I mean, right.
It's
funny. F-350 all the way.
There's all this stuff to think about. I mean, yeah, I think they would, but, you know, that also leads itself to, you know, there was some question as to whether or not the vehicle would be, you know, would it have a full tank of gas when you do it?
Yeah.
Police vehicles are well maintained. They're very well maintained. At the end, practically at the end of every shift, they're given the once over, you know, often anyways.
Yeah.
If not once a week. They're very, very well maintained. You don't know what you're getting into if you jump into
A
civilian car. That's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just they're jumping into an unknown world at that point and pursuing somebody at high speeds, maybe.
Yeah.
And not exactly sure what's going to happen.
Right. And when we've been talking about this, listeners, you probably noticed that we're talking a lot about local law enforcement. You know, we mentioned the FBI case in D.C., but it's true that if your car is commandeered, then the person doing it, if they're not a criminal, the person doing it is much more likely to be local, like local sheriff, deputy, or local PD, because, we have in our jurisdictions in the U.S., we have laws that allow local law enforcement to demand assistance from the public. These laws are sometimes known under a really cool name, Posse Comitatus.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And you know what I also found is that, and I you may have more to say about that, but I also want to mention that one of the FBI agents that spoke up here in one of these articles from the LA Times said that FBI agents tend to travel in packs, and it's less likely for them to require to commandeer a vehicle from a citizen.
Yeah.
They would be able to use one of their own vehicles or just jump in the back seat of another one and take off. But, you know, a local police officer may be traveling alone, or maybe there's two people and one has already left and, you know, their car is suddenly stranded on the side of the road, but they need to help join this chase.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's more need for local authorities to do something like this.
Right.
Even though it rarely happens.
And, what are the consequences if you don't do something like this. Mm-hmm. Well, those, of course, can also change depending on where you are. We mentioned Connecticut, right? Going mm-hmm. back to that Straight Dope article, failing to assist a police officer on command counts as a Class A misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. So your maximum penalty there is a $2,000 fine and a year in jail. Now, I think in practice, you're probably not going to get a year in jail for refusing to let somebody steal your car.
I don't think so.
No, but that fine would happen. And, you know, police are professionals. Again, this, if an officer is asking for your vehicle to help stop a crime, mm-hmm. then we know a couple things immediately. Number one, the situation is out of hand. Mm-hmm. Something really bad has gone down. And number two, the officer themselves are in a time crunch. It's not a leisurely thing at all.
Yeah, exactly. And no one, as far as the Snopes article is concerned, they said that no one has ever been tried successfully or otherwise for refusing to surrender a vehicle to the police in a situation like this. So if you did refuse that vehicle, they've never been brought to court for something like that. Now, has it ever happened? Probably.
Sure.
I'm sure that's probably happened because someone's probably scared, you know, but typically what happens is someone comes to the door with a badge in hand, a police officer, and, you know, usually you obey what an officer says. I mean, and if it's a kind of an abrupt situation, they knock on the window, they open the door, you know, whatever it happens to be, and say, I need this vehicle, please get out quick. You would probably do that. I mean, it's just kind of an instinct. You just do that. I don't think a lot of people would be, you know, aggressive towards the officer, would be defiant in any way, and would say, you know, I don't think so. Tell me my, show me where it says that you can take my vehicle in the, in our local laws or whatever. I mean, no one would really ask for documentation on the spot or anything like that. I think that people would just generally comply with something like this.
Yeah, there's a psychological aspect to that too. Mm-hmm. There have been some rulings that impose some strict limits on how this kind of government commandeering your property has to go down. But before we get to that, and now let's go back to the legal cases and check out some laws here. There's another legal case called United States versus Russell, and I want to read part of this finding to you.
All right, that sounds good. You got the legal angles on this one.
Yeah, I'm the residential legal beagle today. All right, so they decided to they needed to define what constitutes an emergency. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we've all had this talk with a friend or family member at some point of what actually is an emergency, because people's ideas differ.
Sure.
You know? So here's what they said. They said extraordinary and unforeseen occasions arise, however, beyond all doubt, in cases of extreme necessity in time of war or of immediate and impending public danger, in which private property may be impressed in the public service or may be seized and appropriated or even destroyed without the consent of the owner. And they say, but the public danger must be immediate, imminent, and impending, and the emergency in the public service must be extreme and imperative so that it will not admit of delay or resort to any other source of supply. So really what they're saying, and I'm going to cut it short there, really what they're saying is that it can only be used as a last resort.
Yeah, understood. And you know what? You mentioned something important in there that was kind of hidden in there.
What's that?
That kind of leads into the point that I want to make here, the last thing that I really want to say about this.
Okay.
And it's talking about compensation. Now, if you have more that you want to add to that, please do. But I'd like to go to compensation at some point. So you want to do that
now? Let's do it now. What happens?
Well, right? This is kind of a common question that goes around is that, you know, if the police do commandeer my vehicle, you know what happens to those vehicles. I mean, you're in a high-speed chase.
Yeah.
You know what happens to vehicles in a high-speed chase.
Boom.
Yeah. They either get they're used to execute the pit maneuver,
right,
or they're smashed into a wall. They hit, you know, a vehicle that comes out of nowhere, you know,
a high
street
speed,
sign, whatever.
Possibly fatal game of bumper cars.
Exactly. It's very, very dangerous. And of course, there's a lot of property damage that happens in a high speed chase. So, you know, of course, yes, they can take your vehicle to aid in the capture of a criminal. But what do they do? Is there any compensation for that? Now, if the vehicle's not damaged, it turns out, of course, there's no compensation. It's just like, well, you get a pat on the back for helping the authorities, and they may, and this is maybe, they would give you like maybe a tank of gas. They maybe would, you know, have the mayor of the town write you a letter, something like that. You know, it would be like the police chief may say, like, you know, I'd like you to come in and I'll give you this honorary badge as a, you know, a deputy or whatever, you know, that type of thing.
That's kind of cool.
Well, that would be really cool. You know, that's kind of the common thought is that, you know, like you might get a little fuel and a thank you note.
I would take keeping my car in driving shape though.
I would too. Yeah. That would be the better idea. Now, if it's totaled, Ben, if the car is totaled during this or if there's damage, there's a chance that, that they would give you like blue book value of it, I would think, you know, like the Kelley Blue Book, or they would offer you a replacement vehicle. Of some type, I would think. And this is just, you know, a collaboration of different answers from all over the place.
Okay? Yeah.
So some of these are coming from police officers. Some of these are coming from, federal officers that are saying like, well, I've never really seen this happen, but here's what I think would happen. You know, the blue book value thing, if it was totaled, or they may pick up the cost of repairs and give you a rental until it's fixed. You know, so that you're not out of a vehicle. They don't inconvenience you in any way. But I think that the blue book value thing is probably what would happen. They would just scrap it at that point if it was really damaged.
Well, I can help out with a little bit of this when it comes to the property, the destroy or damage of property.
Sure.
This is weird because it's a murky area in the law. That United States versus Russell court case,
sure.
Supreme Court case, it dates back to the Civil War, Scott. That's how long people have been trying to figure this out.
No kidding.
Yeah, so the actual claim was that three steamers were commandeered by the military during the Civil War. And so the court was weighing this case of, you know, your private rights as an individual, the owner of these steamers, versus the public safety, you know. Kind of an early national security argument since it was the Civil War.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah. And so in this case, the court said that, the military was obligated to make full restitution for this sacrifice.
And I think that's what we find in all these cases, even modern cases, that the responsibility for the repairs or the replacement goes upon the authorities that took the vehicle.
Right. Yeah. And that you as the person, the commandee or whatever, the one who is being commandeered from, you are relatively immune to a suit. So, for instance, in like a worst possible case scenario, let's say that your car has a belt that's about to snap. The police commandeer your vehicle because there's last resort situation, and by gosh, it snaps mid-chase.
Yeah, because they're pushing the car harder than it probably would be if you were driving it.
Right, and so then maybe they get in an accident and they are injured. Well, you would not be sued.
You'd not be liable for the injury to the officer.
Right.
And they would be liable for the damage to the vehicle.
Well, see, that's interesting because the Supreme Court still hasn't ruled totally on that in modern times. So this means that lower courts are deciding this.
Hmm.
And sometimes they're reluctant to compensate.
And again, this happens so rarely.
It just
doesn't happen. I mean, you'll find that it's so rare. Maybe that's the reason that no one's really, they are shuffling their feet on this one, that no one's really jumping to change anything on this one quickly because it just doesn't happen often enough for it to really be an issue more than, let's say, once a year somewhere in the United States, it probably happens, you know, I don't really know the numbers, Ben. I'm just making that up, but going on some of these interviews
it's very rare.
Yeah, it's extremely rare. And for people to say, you know, I've gone my whole career at this, in this agency, and I have never, ever even heard of anything like this happening to any other officer. Of course, myself has never happened to. You know, you would think that it would just be more common than this, but it's not.
Okay, Scott, before we close up the show here, I just want to note that this entire conversation reminds me of Grand Theft Auto V.
Really?
Yeah, it's an extremely popular video game. You've heard of it, right?
I've heard of it, but I'm not a gamer.
Yeah, but and we've talked about maybe doing a podcast on the various cars in Grand Theft Auto V. So listeners, you were probably thinking of this too if you're a game fan when we're talking about commandeering vehicles, because that's one of the things you do all the time as a criminal in that game. So let us know if you would like to hear more about Grand Theft Auto V cars, and let us know if you've had an experience with posse comitatus.
Yeah, that would be interesting. If that would be extremely rare, I think. I mean, out of our select audience,
right?
Out of a practice that really never happens, according to the authorities,
right?
Has anybody in our audience ever had something like this happen or similar? I mean, have they ever commandeered a boat on a lake to catch somebody that's, you know, escaping that way?
Yeah.
A plane, I would think, would be extremely rare.
Right.
I can almost see. I can almost see an ATV situation happening. I can kind
of, I can kind of
picture
a specialty vehicle.
Yeah, something like a poacher in the forest or something like that. They find, and you know, the park ranger finds somebody that's on an ATV and says, "I need this right now. I'll bring it right back. I promise. You know, I'll have it back to you within an hour or whatever."
Right.
I could see something like that happening.
Oh, one thing we do need to say, this my last thing to end on before we do listener mail.
Okay.
This might blow your mind. I don't know if you read this.
I don't know.
Police officers are not the only government agents who can commandeer property.
Really?
Some jurisdictions allow firefighters to commandeer property.
Firefighters?
Yes,
no
sir.
Kidding. How does that work?
Let me show you here from, again, this article on the Straight Dope was just amazing. Check this out for more information. It had this note here that the Martinsville, Virginia Fire Department's website has the following written in it. In pursuance of using horses for transportation, an ordinance was passed authorizing firemen to stop and commandeer any horse-drawn vehicle on the street and pull apparatus taken for public use.
No kidding.
Yeah, so
that's another one that goes back to probably the 1880s or something.
Right. And it, you know, it makes sense if you think about areas that are prone to wildfires, because that would be a clear public need very quickly.
Yeah, no kidding. That's pretty interesting. So this goes, the commandeering goes way, way back, farther than we ever thought.
Yes, but if you are really into the idea of commandeering, vehicles from civilians, and that's the main reason you want to be a police officer, rethink your time before you go to the academy.
Well, if you're watching, you know, 24 or any of these TV dramas that, you know, it happens weekly, you know, you'd be excited by something like that. Plus movies, you know, we've said that movies from the 80s, that's what it reminds us a lot of, but it still happens even through today. So, you know, this is something that's been around for a long, long time in popular culture. And, just in real life, we find out that it just really doesn't happen all that often. It's very, very rare.
Yeah. Like the, car explosions.
Yeah. So I guess we find it's just like a movie cliche that we just see so often over and over again that it becomes part of our conscious that we think it really does happen in real life.
Well, you know what is really going to happen in real life, Scott?
What's that?
Some listener mail. Okay, we've got some stuff from Facebook here today. So Thomas P. wrote in to say, "I'm restoring a 1968 Ford Thunderbird with a 429 engine. I'm thinking of putting on an aftermarket EFI in place of the stock carburetor. There are many of these units out, and they're all pretty much described as easy to install. Would this be a good topic of discussion for the podcast? I haven't heard many folks saying they've installed one, so I'd be interested to hear your take."
Possibly. Switching over to electronic fuel injection, getting rid of the old carb.
Yeah.
Hmm.
End of an era, buddy.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, if you don't want to keep it stock, I guess that's one way to go. I think a lot of people have done this. I see those kits for sale all the time.
Right,
and
yeah.
And he's right. They do.
They all say easy to install.
They really do. Like, installs in 1 hour type of thing, right?
I bet.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that goes. I hope it goes well for him, though. But, yeah, maybe a good topic. I mean, switch over from, I guess, old school tech, you know, the carb, to, you know, the new school way of thinking,
mm-hmm.
kind of updating your classic. That's not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea.
We
at
did
all.
Retro rods.
We was, did,
but
yeah.
But this is like just one component within that. So mm-hmm. we'll see. Maybe we'll get to that one.
Yeah, I don't know. Keep your ears peeled, my friend, and thank you for writing to us.
And good luck with that project. That sounds pretty cool.
Oh yeah, it does sound like it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
So we are going to head out today. We hope you enjoyed a little bit of myth-busting on police commandeering cars, and we would love to hear what you think about this sort of situation, or if you just have some upcoming topics you'd like to cover in the show. You can find us on carstuffshow.com, the website we have. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We're your Carstuff HSW, and you can always send us an email directly. We are
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.